Now
on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
Good morning. It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. Jeff Wolf is behind the console. Jaden Houghton, our producer this morning. And we have been following the story out of San Francisco. The San Francisco police held a news conference last night and released more details on the husband of the Speaker of the House, Paul Pelosi, and, of course, that violent attack on Mr. Pelosi yesterday. What they have said is that the suspect obviously broke into House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's San Francisco home very early Friday morning, violently assaulted her husband with a hammer. They are now saying it was a targeted attack, and they are saying that Paul Pelosi apparently called 911 without the attacker noticing, and the dispatcher was able to hear enough of the conversation in the background to request that officers make a wellness check at the home. This happened at about 2:30 in the morning in the Pacific Heights area of San Francisco. When they arrived, they found the suspect, David DePepe, and Mr. Pelosi struggling over a single hammer. Officers instructed for both men to let go of the weapon. At that time, DePepe ended up pulling the hammer away from Paul Pelosi and attacked the 82-year-old man with the hammer. This in a news conference last night from the San Francisco police. They went on to say that the officers immediately tackled the suspect, disarmed him, took him into custody, and requested emergency backup and rendered medical aid until EMT could get there. Pelosi made the initial call to police, and at a second news conference, the one I'm talking about last night, the chief reiterated that the act was not random. He said, quote, "This was intentional. Everyone should be disgusted by what happened this morning." That from the chief of police in San Francisco. A spokesman for Nancy Pelosi's office said that her husband suffered a fractured skull and serious injuries to his right arm and hands. He was struck at least once, they say. He remains hospitalized. So that is the very latest on the condition of the husband of Speaker Pelosi. We'll move on to other stories in the news this week, and one that affects all of us. Of course, gasoline prices. And President Biden has found in the polling that this is a real problem for the upcoming midterms. And he is out on the trail making a lot of claims about gasoline prices that are factually incorrect, whether it's his lack of a grasp on how to handle a teleprompter, whether he's going off script, or whether it's just flat-out misrepresentations that are being scripted for him by his staff, it is somewhat of a mess. Now, here's one of the quotes that he said yesterday.
Gas prices are continuing to go down. And because they're going down, we're making serious progress in getting prices close to what they were before the pandemic.
Getting prices close to what they were before the pandemic. Well, before the pandemic, the prices were at $2.45, and as of today, the gasoline prices are at $3.76. So that is nowhere near close. So nice try, but not quite. Now, here's a gem. You may recall when he got into office, the gasoline prices were down in that $2.45 range. However, at this point in time, here's how the president now casts gasoline prices when he took office.
Today, the most common price of gas in America is $3.39, down from over $5 when I took office.
Well, that's a flat-out lie or a real glaring mistake. It was not $5. Nice try. And, you know, these sound bites go out. And they're not challenged by the mainstream media outlets. They just go right out there. Nice try. Well, you may have heard that he's tapped the American oil reserves. And you may hear that the U.S. oil reserves are getting dangerously low. Well, here's what the Saudi energy minister, Salman Al Saud, had to say about tapping oil reserves. This is the Saudi energy minister talking to us.
It is my profound duty to make it clear to the world that losing emergency stock may become painful in the months to come.
All right, so that's the warning from the Saudi energy minister. He's telling the president what we've all been telling him: stop tapping the oil reserves and let the oil companies produce. Now, that's gasoline. Have you heard about diesel recently? The U.S. is facing a diesel crunch just as the demand is surging ahead of winter. There is an emergency supply of diesel. Well, there was. We only have 25 days of diesel emergency supplies left. That is according to the Energy Information Administration. The National Economic Council Director, Brian Deese, told Bloomberg TV that diesel inventories are, quote, unacceptably low, and all options are on the table to bolster supply and reduce prices. Nice work, guys. I mean, your policies and strategies are just great. The Biden administration seems to be left with very few sustainable options for long-term relief at this point as the stockpiles are being drained. So that's the mess that we're all facing with diesel and oil. That's not to mention the heating costs that we will be facing this winter, not only here in the Washington area, but what they are already looking at in New England. And as it gets colder, and as the midterms approach and they get that first energy bill up in New England, another shocker, and that's not going to help the Democrats in New England in the midterm elections. It is 6:17. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL, and Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center.
On the outer loop of the Beltway in Cabin John, you're going to find it jammed up between Clara Barton Parkway and the 495 Express Lanes entrance. On 66 eastbound in Vienna, it's jammed up between Nutley Street and the Beltway. On the Beltway in Maryland, in Prince George's County and in Montgomery County, no delays on the inner loop or even on the outer loop. And on 270 southbound in Rockville, jackknife tractor trailer on Montrose Road, traffic is very slow from Falls Road. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Plenty of sunshine as we move through the afternoon hours with temperatures in the lower 60s, mainly clear and cool overnight, 40s by early tomorrow morning. For tomorrow, partly to mostly cloudy, isolated showers by evening, high temperatures in the lower 60s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Steve Rudin, the First Alert Weather Center.
6:19, the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It is the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. Thank you for being with us. It's Halloween weekend. I want to turn to the debates this week, some very important debates and some Republicans scoring some pretty big strides in the debates this week. And so much has been made of the John Fetterman debate and his recovery from the stroke. So we won't go to the stroke recovery in the segment we're going to play here. I just want to give you a sample of what he had to deal with from his past record and past things that he has said to what he now is saying in the campaign. You know, it's funny how people can do a 180 when you have to get elected. So let's take you back to 2018. This is John Fetterman, the Lieutenant Governor of Pennsylvania, who is running for the Senate. This is John Fetterman talking about his feelings on fracking in 2018.
Fracking. Yeah, fracking. No, I don't support fracking at all, and I never have, and I've signed the No Fossil Fuels Money Pledge, and I have never received a dime from any natural gas or oil company whatsoever.
Well, that's pretty clear. Well, it got foggy, though, in the debate because he's changed his tune, and he was questioned about that specific interview.
I absolutely support fracking.
There is that 2018 interview that you said, quote, I don't support fracking at all. So how do you square the two?
Oh, I do support fracking, and I support fracking, and I stand, and I do support fracking.
All right, so there's the 180 for convenience. That's the Pennsylvania debate. That's enough of that one. Let's turn to New York, because Congressman Lee Zeldin, everybody had pretty much written off Lee Zeldin and his chances for becoming the governor of New York earlier this year. Well, it's real tight. They're within a couple of points of each other. Kathy Hochul, of course, the appointed governor. She was not elected to New York's governorship. She just happened in after Mr. Cuomo was happening out. So as we look at the campaign trail, they're back and forth about crime, and Zeldin's made a really big issue about crime. And Kathy Hochul, this week, now she's starting to pay a little more attention to crime, but most of her emphasis has been on gun control versus prosecution and enforcement of the law. Here's how she cast it in the debate.
You can either work on keeping people scared, or you can focus on keeping them safe. But there is no crime-fighting plan if it doesn't include guns, illegal guns.
Well, here's what Lee Zeldin has to say about her policies and his policies.
Yeah, we should be going after the criminal who's committing crime after crime after crime with an illegal firearm. But what about the person being pushed in front of an oncoming subway car? How about the person who is getting stabbed right now? Or that small business owner who's getting robbed all day, every day?
So that's Lee Zeldin, and he continues. You may have heard about the prosecutor in New York, Alvin Bragg, has been very lax on prosecutions. I don't know if you saw the video recently of a man in a McDonald's swinging an axe and smashing up the McDonald's, and there are obviously people around, and he's swinging this axe. He didn't hit any of the people, but it's a very violent scene. Well, he was out the next day. So Alvin Bragg's been under a lot of pressure for a long time about his lack of prosecution and the very lax bail, the cashless bail in New York. So here is another note from Lee Zeldin on how he will handle Alvin Bragg his first day in office.
Alvin Bragg is not doing his job. The message will absolutely be sent that if you're the DA, it stands for district attorney, not defense attorney. Alvin Bragg can go be a defense attorney, but if he's not going to do his job, I'm going to do my job, and I'm going to remove him as soon as I can.
Well, there's also a movement to remove the Philadelphia DA, the Philadelphia prosecutor. I don't know why they call him a prosecutor. He should be a defense attorney, but they do call him a prosecutor. Larry Krasner. And Larry Krasner has been under the gun all week because the Pennsylvania House has been doing impeachment hearings, and they finally did file articles of impeachment. And here's how Martina White of the Pennsylvania House summed things up in that articles of impeachment this week on Larry Krasner.
The city of Philadelphia cannot afford to wait any longer for us to take action on what we already know to be true. That Krasner is responsible for the rise in crime across our city due to his dereliction of duty to prosecute the guilty and to protect the innocent. He has tipped the scales of justice in favor of criminals.
So that's a look at some of the audio from the week. We'll have some more audio coming up for you a little bit later on in the program. We do have our lineup this morning of Jennifer Harper from the Washington Times, and she's always got some fascinating poll numbers, and people are just getting less and less happy with things, the way things are going. So we'll talk to Jennifer about that. John Gizzi will join us. We'll get his read on the debates this week, who wins, who loses, how tight are these races. He'll also look at the attack on Speaker Pelosi's husband. Cheryl Atkison will join us this morning. Real interesting conversation with Cheryl about a Carrie Lake press conference. And, of course, Carrie Lake running for governor in Arizona. And she had a press conference and really attacked the media. And that's interesting because she's a former television news anchor from Arizona. And we both tried, and we couldn't find much coverage. Very difficult to find coverage of stories that maybe shed light on things that some of the people in the media don't want us to shed light on. So we'll have that for you coming up with Cheryl Atkinson. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer will join us this morning. We'll get the latest on the scenario in Ukraine that will be coming your way and how these energy prices will be affecting us from a national security and defense standpoint. And KT McFarland is on the way. And, of course, with KT, we take a look at the events of the week and kind of put it all in perspective from about 50,000 feet. So that's all coming up right here on the Saturday Morning Update. In the news at 6:30, an intruder has attacked the husband of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi with a hammer in the couple's San Francisco home. It happened early Friday morning. Reports are that he was shouting, "Where is Nancy?" Police say they were called to the couple's home where they discovered David DePape and Paul Pelosi struggling over a hammer. The intruder then hit Pelosi with the hammer before subdued by those police. Nancy Pelosi was in Washington at the time of the attack, returned late yesterday to California. The UN Mideast envoy says 2022 is on course to be the deadliest year for Palestinians in the West Bank since the UN started tracking fatalities in 2005. They've called for an immediate action to calm a, quote, explosive situation and move toward renewing Israeli-Palestinian negotiations. Twitter's unending fight against spam accounts is now in the hands of the new owner, Elon Musk. He pledged in April to defeat the bot scourge, or die trying. He later cited bots as a reason to back out of buying the social platform. Now the billionaire has completed the deal, and he is now faced with the task of delivering on the promise to clean up the fake profiles that have preoccupied him and bedeviled Twitter since long before he expressed interest in acquiring it. And one of Jewish diarist Anne Frank's best friends has died at the age of 93. The foundation that runs the Amsterdam Museum, named for Frank, paid tribute to Hannah Pick Goslar for helping to keep Anne's memory alive. Pick Goslar grew up with Anne after both their families left Germany as Adolf Hitler's Nazi party rose to power. And at the World Series, the game won. It was a home run in the 10th inning, and the Philadelphia Phillies, saved by the right fielder Nick Castellanos' sliding catch, rallied past the Houston Astros 6-5 in the World Series opener. 6:32, Al BD is in the WML Traffic Center this morning.
On 66 eastbound in Vienna, traffic is jammed up between Nutley Street and the Beltway. On the outer loop of the Beltway in Cabin John, that's jammed up between the Clara Barton Parkway and the 495 Express Lanes entrance. Into Maryland on the Beltway in Prince George's County, no delays on the inner loop or on the outer loop. In Montgomery County on 270 southbound in Rockville, there is a jackknife tractor trailer right at Montrose Road. Traffic is crawling from Falls Road. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Storm Watch 7 forecast.
Plenty of sunshine as we move through the afternoon hours with temperatures in the lower 60s, mainly clear and cool overnight, 40s by early tomorrow morning. For tomorrow, partly to mostly cloudy, isolated showers by evening, high temperatures in the lower 60s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Steve Rudin, the First Alert Weather Center.
44 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:33 on the Saturday Morning Update.
The latest headlines.
And your place to talk about it.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
Saturday Morning Update, Halloween weekend. I'm Rick Fowler. Jennifer Harper joins us. She writes inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Good morning.
Well, good morning, Rick, and good morning, everybody.
And tell us what your costume is going to be on Monday.
Oh, I'll never tell, Rick.
All right. Well, we're less than 2 weeks away from the midterms and a lot of mistrust around the country in politicians, in the media. And what are you finding in the poll numbers that you track very closely?
Well, it's interesting. Two of our major pollsters have gauged public trust in all of the entities that we're surrounded with all the time. And let's look at Gallup and the Pew Research Center here. And first off, Gallup comes right out and says, trust in the media is stuck in the mud. That is their words, which is certainly why I paid attention to it. And they report that just 7% of Americans have a great deal of trust and confidence in the media. 27% have a fair amount. 28% say they do not have very much confidence. 38% have no confidence at all.
Wow.
In the media. Yeah, it kind of goes from so-so to worse. But anyway, according to Gallup, they say Americans' confidence in the media has been anemic for nearly two decades. And Gallup's latest findings further document that distrust. The current level of public trust is the media's full, fair, and accurate reporting of the news is the second lowest on record. And it's pretty complicated, but of course there's a big partisan divide there. 70% of Democrats, 14% of Republicans, and 27% of independents say that they do have some confidence in the media. But before we think about that, let's move down to the Pew Research Center. This is more wide-ranging, and sorry for all the numbers this morning, but here they go. 80% of U.S. adults trust medical scientists to act in the best interest of the public. 77% trust the military. 77% trust scientists in general. 68% trust public school principals. 53% trust religious leaders. Oh, I forgot one. 70% trust police officers. 44% trust journalists. 39% trust business leaders. And at the very bottom, Rick, 28% trust elected officials to act in the best interest of the public. This is a big poll, over 10,000 people from the Pew Research Center, and that was released on Tuesday.
So three presidents on the campaign trail this weekend, and one of them is probably busier than the other two in the weeks ahead. And which one is it?
Take a wild guess on that one, Rick. Certainly former President Donald Trump. You just wonder what his intentions are right now, because he has really been on the road. And if you do some of the peek in there, he's going to be 77 years old on his next birthday in June. But, you know, his upcoming schedule, Rick, does not look like the plannings of, say, a 77-year-old. And according to presidentialelectionnews.com, Donald Trump has scheduled some massive events in Iowa, Pennsylvania, Florida, and Ohio. This is according to Nate Ashworth. He is founder of Election Central. This is a very interesting site. But anyway, he said he will continue making his imprint on the November 8th midterm elections with the announcement of four upcoming Save America rallies to support various Republican candidates in races around the country. Trump will be crisscrossing into some of the most critical battleground states, where control of the House and Senate will be decided. The rallies do not come without intrigue, of course, since it is likely no coincidence that one of the stops is in Iowa, the first in the nation caucus state for the 2024 presidential primary. Again, that's coming from Nate Ashworth. He's founder of Election Central. And if you're wondering how many rallies he's done this year alone, well, it's at 30 rallies, and we did a big count here at the Washington Times, and according to the past schedules, he's had 30 rallies, and if you're curious about what his schedule might be, you can go to DonaldJTrump.com and look under events.
Well, Election Day, as we mentioned, is right around the corner, and it's all about the turnout. And what's the weather prediction? You've got it?
The Old Farmer's Almanac does. How about that? This is a publication that was first surfaced in 1792. Actually, I kind of like the Old Farmer's Almanac, but anyway, they have issued its official weather prediction for Election Day, and here's what they say. For the U.S. midterm elections coming up on November 8th, we're expecting to see a mixed bag of conditions around the nation. Some will wake to snow, some to rain, and some to a dry, sunny day, and we'll go to our area, more or less. We're predicting favorable voting weather across much of the eastern United States with a mix of sun and clouds and an autumn chill in the air throughout the region. Snow will threaten in the northeast, but as we move south and west from there, the weather looks to be more pleasant for those waiting in line to vote, although it will be cold. And, of course, there are going to be some showers at the Great Lakes and through Ohio and Tennessee. And it does go on and on. But I have to say, Old Farmer's Almanac really does keep current on all this stuff. And they even went up to predict what was going to happen in Alaska. They see it'll be a cold election day across Alaska with some snow showers around. Hawaii, on the other hand, will be mild with a few showers on hand. We hope that the voting goes smoothly across the country despite any wild weather that gets thrown our way. Again, that's the old Farmer's Almanac predicting your election day.
Just about the time you think you've seen every possible Halloween celebration, you've got another one.
Yes, well, I didn't come up with this one, but the young Republicans have come up with this one, and they are going to be embracing MAGAween as opposed to Halloween, and that's certainly a Trump-oriented or Republican-oriented celebration. And we're going to focus in particular on the New York Young Republicans Club. We're kind of stuck in a historic mode this morning. This was established in 1911, and it has organization roots reaching all the way back to 1856, when they were known as the New York Young Men's Republican Union. But anyway, they are centered right there in Manhattan. And they are very, very active. They have lots of speakers coming up, networking events, get out the vote efforts, and something they call a wide awakes group, which is described as a political strike force. But they're also going to be having a big shindig, the fourth annual rooftop MAGAween party. And MAGAween has been around for a couple of years. I was unaware of it, but anyway, it's been around for about 4 years, and it certainly makes creative use of MAGA, which is Make American Great Again. And the instructions from our young Republicans are to get creative, scary, and downright spooky, wear your best costumes, and join us for our most popular party. Costume contest awards will be handed out during our event, so show up to win. And they're also going to have a Paint the Town Red election night party. That will include Stefano Fort. He is a New York State Senate candidate, and they will also be having an annual gala in December, which will feature an appearance with Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene and Human Events Senior Editor and a broadcast commentator, Jack Posobiec. So that's what our young Republicans are up to.
We've talked often about the Fox News ratings success, and you've got another story on that out this week.
Yeah, well, this is a very specific one, and this is having to do with late-night TV. If you do watch late-night TV on Fox News, you'll likely watch Greg Gutfeld. He's a very funny guy. I actually sat with him once at one of the big shindigs that we have in D.C. every now and then, and he is genuinely a funny fellow, but anyway, on his late night show, Gutfeld, he had his highest rated program in its history this week. He had an audience of 2.5 million viewers, and he also managed to defeat every single one of his rivals in late night broadcast and cable TV as well. He bested The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. They only came in with 2.1 million, followed by The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. He also bested Jimmy Kimmel Live, MSNBC's 11th Hour, CBS's Late Late Show, ABC's Nightline, and also Comedy Central's Daily Show, and CNN's Tonight. And just as a contrast, you know, here this gentleman has 2.5 million viewers. ABC's Nightline had 724,000. And also CNN's Tonight had 412,000. So you can see Mr. Gutfeld and Fox News are doing very well in the late-night world.
So Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky has had his hands full, but he did squeeze in some time to write a new book.
Well, yeah, I guess so. Things can happen pretty quickly in the publishing world these days. And indeed, Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky, he's got a new book arriving in just 7 weeks. And this is courtesy of a major U.S. publisher, that's Penguin Random House. They're going to be releasing A Message from Ukraine. That's the name of the book on December 6th. It is based on this young leader's pretty effective public outreach to his people while totally, literally under the gun. And according to the publisher, they say the words of a man and the message of a people, bringing together a new introduction by Volodymyr Zelensky with his most powerful war speeches, This book recounts Ukraine's story through the words of its president. It is the story of a nation valiantly defending itself from Russian aggression, and it is the story of a people leading the world in the struggle for democracy. Again, the book is called A Message from Ukraine. It's essentially a lot of the speeches that he gave while, you know, totally under fire. It's not a great long book. It's about 144 pages long. And its cover is very simple, the blue and yellow colors of the Ukraine. And it's already available for pre-order. If you're curious about this, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, et cetera, even Walmart is getting in on the act there. And he, you know, Mr. Zelensky, he continues to speak publicly, and he uses a Telegram Messenger. This is a messaging application based in Dubai, which has 700 million users. So interesting politics going on there. And again, the name of the book, A Message from Ukraine.
Jennifer Harper, Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. As always, thank you so much and have a happy Halloween.
My pleasure, and happy Halloween to our listeners.
6:47, Saturday morning update on WMAL. Al BD is in the WMAL traffic center this morning.
Maryland side of the Beltway, no problems in Prince George's County or in Montgomery County. In Montgomery County on 270 southbound in Rockville, tractor trailer has jackknifed at Montrose Road. Traffic is crawling from Falls Road. Now into Virginia on the Beltway Outer Loop at Cabot John. It's jammed up between Clara Barton Parkway and the 495 express lanes. On 66 eastbound in Vienna, you're going to find it jammed up between Nutley Street and the Beltway. And on 95 in Virginia, no delays between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, northbound or southbound. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Plenty of sunshine as you move through the afternoon hours with temperatures in the lower 60s, mainly clear and cool overnight, 40s by early tomorrow morning. For tomorrow, partly to mostly cloudy, isolated showers by evening, high temperatures in the lower 60s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Steve Rudin, the First Alert Weather Center.
44 degrees at 6:48 on the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9.
WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
The Saturday morning update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. Thank you for being with us on a Halloween weekend. Time to get to a couple of stories that you probably didn't hear in the mainstream. Probably didn't hear this one on NBC, ABC, or CBS. And oh, by the way, Jim Trusty has the weekend off. He'll be back with us next weekend. Here's one. Newly elected Representative Myra Flores, Republican of Texas, said the Congressional Hispanic Caucus declined her request to join what is a Democrat-only group of lawmakers that shared the same Hispanic background. She said, as the first Mexican-born congresswoman to serve in the U.S. House of Representatives, I thought joining the Congressional Hispanic Caucus would be a constructive way to build bridges and work in a bipartisan manner on behalf of our constituents. I was wrong. The Congressional Hispanic Caucus is comprised of 36 House Democrats and did not respond to a request for comment. However, Ana Paulina Luna is a Republican in Florida. She is running for Congress. She is Hispanic. Here's what she had to say.
You know, what's interesting is I was just talking to Myra and a group thread of Yesley Vega and a few other Hispanic candidates that are Republicans. And it's been a general consensus that once we get elected on November 8th, that we will actually form our own caucus. Unfortunately, those progressive leftists don't want to acknowledge that minorities can be Republican. And so we hope to push back in a very public sense come November 8th.
Let's turn to the latest on Hunter Biden. Senator Chuck Grassley and Ron Johnson released bank records this week, 200 pages of bank records. They've turned them over to the prosecutor in Delaware, looking into Hunter Biden. And the Daily Mail did an analysis and some interesting things here. Summary, the president's son and his brother, Jim Biden, pocketed seven-figure salaries and hefty bonuses for lucrative joint ventures linked to the Communist Party and Beijing spies, in quotes. Well, here's how it went down. Chinese oil giant CEFC plowed almost $11 million into the joint venture with Hunter Biden. As the money flowed in, Hunter and his Uncle Jim, Biden, paid themselves $100,000 and $65,000 monthly salaries, not annual, $100,000 and $65,000 a month, millions of dollars ostensibly for the Biden's efforts to land energy deals for CEFC around the world. Hundreds of pages of bank records released on Tuesday. And, of course, those two senators have been investigating the First Sun for quite a while now. The report said Hunter and Jim's companies received over $4.9 million from Hudson West, a company jointly owned by Hunter's firm and a subsidiary of CEFC. It's a lot of money to go down. And it's not Russian disinformation, as those 50-some intelligence experts had tried to convince us just before the election that was so close. Well, how does John Stewart analyze this? Of course, you remember the comedian John Stewart. He's been very vocal since leaving the show. The Problem is his show that he was on this week, and here's what he had to say about that.
Hunter Biden being on the board of
Burisma,
to me, that's corruption straight up off the bat. The idea that nepotism would allow much larger amounts of money to flow into the hands of people unqualified because you think those countries are trying to buy influence.
John Stewart on Hunter Biden. Very interesting. And a quick note from the entertainment world. Some people listening may never have heard of Jerry Lee Lewis, but Jerry Lee Lewis is one of the founders of rock and roll. And he passed away at his home in DeSoto County, Mississippi on Friday. His wife was by his side, and it was his seventh wife. He was very controversial over the years. He put on some really wild shows. But I did have a chance to meet him once. He played the House of Blues, and he was a consummate gentleman and very, very nice guy. So as crazy as you may have seen him in person, he was the consummate gentleman. Jerry Lee Lewis.